As evolving science tells us more and more about additives in our food, some Democratic lawmakers and consumer advocates warn that we need to be more careful about what we're putting into our bodies. And to that end, they are pushing to close what they see as a loophole in regulations from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. For more on this issue, we're joined on the Capitol Press Room by Brian Ronholm, Director of Food Policy for Consumer Reports and a former Deputy Undersecretary for Food Safety in the Obama administration. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks for having me, David.
So what is it we're learning about additives in our food that is raising new health concerns?
A big item under the federal law is currently there's this loophole that allows food manufacturers to secretly introduce new food additives without it having to be reviewed or approved by the FDA. So they're allowed to bypass any type of pre-market safety checks within the FDA, as long as they determine by themselves that this is generally recognized as safe. And that's a key term to remember, is generally recognized as safe, and you'll hear it referred to as GRAS.
Well, you mentioned that this is a loophole, and you threw out the idea that there's secret action, which all leads to one thinking this is a very nefarious system we've got going on here. So what is the origin of this generally accepted principle here that the FDA has embraced in the last couple decades?
This originally started, David, in 1958, the Food Additives Amendment of 1958. And what that law did was try to cover widely used ingredients like flour, vinegar, and sugar. So they originally meant for the GRAS process to apply to those types of ingredients, because at the time there wasn't much use of a lot of chemicals, or there's such a limited number that it was easier and more cost effective to have the FDA review these ingredients and chemical additives. But what happened over time is, as more chemicals have been introduced, their system at FDA became overwhelmed. So they weren't able to handle all of the reviews of the chemical additives applications that were coming in. What they did was they ended up expanding this GRAS process so that more chemicals could fit under that particular loophole. So that would allow and more chemical additives to fall under this particular loophole and go out into the marketplace without really having FDA take a look, just because it was such an overwhelming process and a strain on the budget. And, this happened gradually over time. There was another update in the mid-90s that allowed, more of these chemicals to fall under this. And so that's why we have this system now, where the industry is essentially self-regulated. They can determine on their own that a particular additive or chemical is safe and just include it in their product and push it out into the marketplace.
Well, what are some of the additives that are utilized today that have not necessarily gone through the more rigorous screening that we might want them to go through as a result of this generally recognized as safe principle?
There's thousands of chemicals that have fallen under this secret GRAS process. And so it's really hard to keep up which ones are making it through, just because there's no requirement whatsoever for them to notify FDA of what they're doing. They can certainly do it on a voluntary basis, but that's been very, very, very rare when that happens. And so it's very difficult for consumers to keep up with all of this. And there's a lot of chemicals with unpronounceable names. And food companies will, of course, they have a brand to protect. And so you want to believe that they're going to, put things in their food that isn't going to cause illness. But a lot of times we just don't know the extent of the safety with some of this. And we don't know what studies that the company have done to determine the safety. So there's no information or data on long-term impact. So yes, they may input ingredients in their products that may not cause illness in the immediate term, but there could be long-term implications and long-term harm on health, just in terms of the hormonal disruption, development issues, cancers, and things like that. There's just not enough information to determine the complete safety a lot of these chemicals that make it through.
Well, in light of the federal system that's in place right now, how do you think states like New York should respond?
So states like New York are responding, which is reassuring to consumers. Assemblymember Anna Kellis and Senator Brian Kavanaugh introduced legislation that it wouldn't close the loophole, but what it would do is it would require food manufacturers to notify the state of New York when they introduce a new ingredient that hasn't been reviewed by the FDA under this GRAS loophole. So then this information would be disclosed to the public so that the safety of these chemicals could be subject to greater scrutiny. So that allows scientists and even federal regulators, if they have the resources, to take a look at what, you know, what data these companies are using to determine its safety. And, you know, this should not be a strain on New York state resources, because all this bill would do is require this information to be posted. So the New York agencies would not be required to do any type of review or adjudication or anything like that. All they're going to be doing is posting the information that's being provided to them by the companies so that the public and scientists can review this data.
Well, before we move on, let me reintroduce you for listeners just joining us. We're speaking with Brian Ronholm, Director of Food Policy for Consumer Reports and a former Deputy Undersecretary for Food Safety in the Obama administration. When you talk about the public reviewing this data, do you imagine John and Jane Consumer making some sort of evaluation of this information, or are you thinking more about outside organizations that might have more scientific capacity?
It would be probably meant for folks that have a science background, and certainly there are members of the public who will be interested and have that the qualifications and experience to do that type of review. But I would imagine that if this information gets posted, it would certainly capture the attention of academicians, scientists, other state regulators, state scientists, anyone with a science background who's intrigued by this issue would be able to review the information the company has submitted. And that goes a long way toward transparency. And ultimately, that's what consumers want. We want to know what's being put in our food, and we want to know what kind of potential impact it could have on our health.
So in addition to the idea of giving consumers and government officials more information, this legislation does target a few additives that would then be unlawful to be sold after about a year. And I'm not going to try to pronounce some of them, but the ones I can read are red dye 3, potassium bromate. So what is it that we know about these additives right now that suggests they shouldn't be in anything?
There's a lot of chemicals out there, a lot of additives out there that haven't been reviewed by FDA in decades. So even though new information, new science has become available and the type of impact that they can have on, you know, on the human body, and you mentioned red dye 3, you know, right now red dye 3 is in this regulatory quandary where back in 1990, the FDA banned the use of red dye 3 in cosmetics. And so, and they, when they made that announcement, they had intended to review its inclusion in food, but they never got around to it. So right now, you're not able to apply red 3 on your skin as part of a, you know, topical or lotion or makeup or anything like that. But for some reason, you're still allowed to ingest it, even though there is plenty of information to link the consumption of red 3 to cancer. So, you know, that's just a primary example. And you mentioned the others, potassium bromate, that's been banned in other states, and that's also been linked to cancer. Brominated vegetable oil is another one that's been linked to hormone disruption, heart disease, and reproductive harm. Procalparaben, same deal, where it's linked to heart disease, DNA damage, and reproductive harm. So there's more and more of these chemicals and additives that new information is becoming available on how harmful they can be, but yet FDA is unable to handle this issue. both because of a lack of resources and really some calculated indifference.
So something like red dye 3 can be found in candy hearts around Valentine's Day or strawberry milk. So if we were to ban red dye 3, it could be kind of disruptive. That's just one example. So how big of a game changer could this legislation be, both in terms of the substances that are specifically banned or the information that would be required to be disclosed and might then begin a cascading effect of changes about what's allowed to be made and how things are made?
So there's some good news and some frustrating news about this. The good news is this would be minimally disruptive if some of these chemicals ended up being banned, as some of them are in California. And again, you mentioned Red 3. You know, the frustrating news about that is that this is banned in other parts of the world, you know, particularly the EU, Australia, Japan, et cetera. So food companies haven't stopped selling these products in those countries. What they've done is reformulated them. So they're using substitutes that are not only less toxic, but in some cases, they're more cost effective. So that work has already been done. There would be minimal disruption from that. So all they would need to do is reformulate the product here in the US, because what they're doing is they're sending the safer, less toxic versions of their products to other parts of the world. But we're getting the inferior versions here because they're still able to use these toxic chemicals that are still kind of considered okay by the FDA. So that's the good news for consumers. It'll be minimally disruptive. It's products that are already available in other parts of the world. It's just, this is an opportunity to make those safer, less toxic versions available here in New York and in other parts of the country.
Well, finally, if more information is made available about food additives, are we confident that there are people with the expertise, whether it's in government or the private sector, to actually evaluate them? Because as you mentioned earlier, there are thousands of additives. So do we have the capacity at this point to wrap our arms around what's out there?
Yeah, it's unlikely that the regulatory agencies would have that type of capacity. But the good news is there are a number of NGOs and independent nonprofit groups like Consumer Reports, like CSPI, like EWG, that have a number of scientists and science-related PhD folks who will be able to take this information and review it, not to mention, schools, major universities and all of that with, their labs. They'll have some expertise as well to be able to review this information. So when you combine all of that expertise, a lot of that scientific expertise that exists both at colleges and universities and with NGOs, that would be hopefully plenty of bandwidth to allow for adequate review of any information that gets submitted on these additives and chemicals.
Well, we've been speaking with Brian Ronholm. He is the Director of Food Policy for Consumer Reports. Brian, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, David.
Support for the Capital Press Room provided by Better Buildings New York. Better Buildings New York supports clean, healthy, zero emissions buildings and thermal energy networks. It's in favor of the New York Heat Act. More information at betterbuildingsnewyork.org.